It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer Kent. A new book about Racine's union and working class history highlights key lessons from the picket lines decades ago. From strikes at Case, the agricultural equipment maker in the 1950s, to manufacturing plant closures and mass layoffs of the 1980s.
Author Naomi R. Williams shows how Racine maintained a strong labor movement, resisting trends seen in other Midwestern factory towns.
Naomi is an assistant professor of labor studies and employment relations at Rutgers University. Their new book is called A Blueprint for Worker Solidarity, Class Politics and Community in Wisconsin. We spoke last month.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
Communities around Wisconsin have long histories in organizing and unions. Why did you focus on Racine?
I was really excited about a story I heard about it from the 1970s. 1976, SEIU Local 150 members went on strike at the hospital in Racine. And the pictures in the newspaper in the Racine Labor showed these, you know, black and brown women on the picket line. And then you had these white UAW workers behind them. And that story to that picture, those images in Racine Labor were so different than the stories that, you know, we typically hear about labor in the 1970s. And so I wanted to know more about it.
You lay out for us how Racine really is able to overcome some of these racial divisions and build a more inclusive union, a more inclusive working class community. Could you give us a story about one of the faces of this movement?
Probably the person I go to the most to talk about the racial politics is William Jenkins. Mm. He had a long life, a long period of activism in the city. He moved to Racine as a young child, grew up there, went to high school, and started working at one of the foundries. And just his experiences in town and the fact that he was a sports star and lots of folks knew who he was, and he came from a union background, and he was really committed to racial justice and to worker organizing. And he just led the way through so many relationships and building community in terms of introducing folks to each other and standing up for those with less power than he had, and always making sure that he was a voice of reason. And his activism really just spread through his UAW local. He was very active in the Racine NAACP and those dual roles. Mm-hmm. Really just create space, right? Create space for people to ask questions and get involved and feel seen.
It strikes me, reading about Blue Jenkins, who I've never encountered before, he really helped people get established in the community and, as you say, really be seen and just help get their needs met as they moved to the area.
Exactly. His family was, their house was really close to the train station. Mm-hmm. And so as Black folks were migrating from southern cities to northern and western cities, they often look for those types of connections to find out, okay, where's a safe place to live? You know, who's hiring folks that look like me? How can I get established? Things like that. And so his family was sort of a gateway for Black people coming into Racine during the early to mid 1900s.
You also explore the relationship between Racine's labor community and activists like Corrine Reed Owens, who, from what I understand, also was such a driving force in the area. Can you talk about her contribution?
Yeah, the Rosa Parks of Racine.
Yes.
Right? She's a remarkable figure. And unfortunately, you know, these people passed away before I had a chance to interview them. But reading about them and talking to people who knew them, you really see the impact that they had in the community. She was an educator, and she was kept out of the classroom for a long time. But she was really active in education in Racine and really got involved with YWCA and civic organizations and community organizations around housing justice. And so she led a march in Racine to get a Fair Housing Act passed so that Black folks could receive better access to safe and comfortable housing in the city.
Those that really resonates today. And you also found that union leaders would really try to create more inclusive atmospheres and gain the support of all workers. What was it like for women in the community in organizing and in unions?
For one of the things, I'm going to back up a little bit. One of the things that really impressed me about labor organizing in the city is the wide breadth of organizations or businesses and workplaces that were unionized. There was a really active garment workers union, and a lot of women were there. A lot of women were in bookbinding, and there were women spread out in different industrial workplaces. And in fact, there were so many organized working women in Racine that during the 1930s, 1940s, they actually had softball teams that they could play against each other. And just the sheer volume of organized women in the city really opened the door to understanding that everybody belonged in the union movement. And women were very active in their own unions, really demanding respect. They went to very early AFL-CIO conventions, demanding to have a voice in decision-making. And when there were statewide conventions, women workers would make sure that their voices were heard in those spaces as well. And then they actively sought to, so it wasn't perfect. So I'll stop there and say it wasn't a perfect situation, right? But women actively said, this is what we need and this is what we're looking for. And so that just a publicness of the work that they were doing really went a long way in making a difference. So there was a woman on the board for the labor organizations in the county, and just having a seat at the table makes a big difference.
We're talking about Racine's working class history with Naomi R. Williams, an assistant professor of labor studies and employment relations at Rutgers University. The new book is called A Blueprint for Worker Solidarity. Naomi, can you step back and give us a sense of the impact of Local 180, the members of Racine's United Auto Workers? It was, at the time you're writing this book, the largest union in the city in the post-war 60s to 80s. What made this chapter so special?
Yeah, so they worked at Case, all right, Case Manufacturing Plant. They work at Case, right? Local 180 still exists in Racine.
The really large egg manufacturing equipment manufacturer, yeah.
Right, yes. So for me, what was really exciting about what they were doing is they always had to fight for what other UAW locals were getting at the bargaining table with management at Case. Case management was really resistant to give up anything of what they call management prerogative, right? And the workers at Case constantly, bargaining session after bargaining session, had to fight for what was at the time, for example, the 1950s, right? Just basic standard contract language. And it wasn't the case at Case. And so there's a great quote from William Jenkins in his interview from the 1970s, where he says, thinking back on what made the energy in Racine so intense, he was like, you know, it was the workers at Case, and they had to fight, and that labor strife that they dealt with year after year really kept us motivated, kept us focused on making gains and holding on to those gains. And it was a large local. They're really involved in the community, right? And so in this time period, they talked about it as a total person unionism, your responsibility to your coworkers, your union members, but also to your community. And so how are you getting involved in local politics? How are you getting involved in charity? And what's your responsibility as a union member? And really living that. And then you had leaders like Tony Vallejo, who, and Harvey Kitzman. I should start with Harvey Kitzman, actually. And really just this broad view, working together with folks like William Jenkins and Tony Vallejo to kind of shape a narrative about the responsibility of Racine's workers to make Racine the best city in Wisconsin.
what stands out to me, and I think you said it in Tony Vallejo, who was going door to door, was going to workplaces to explain to workers why unions were valuable. And it seems like it was such a grassroots human approach. Is there a thread in that to where you might see Racine today?
I think it is. He was one of the folks that set the example for labor activists coming after him of, okay, you're doing your work at the job site, in your union, but also in the community, and then retiring and moving into the broader UAW position, right? So he becomes an international representative. And so he's representing members across UAW locals in the city, in the county, in the district, and really just trying to make sure that everybody understood what was going on during contract negotiations at their particular workplace. If there's an organizing drive, really wanting to make sure that workers understood what was at stake. And also being involved in community organizations, right? So understanding that it's not just what happens at work, but people need safe places to live. People need to be able to afford to pay their utility bills. They need access to insurance, right? Mm-hmm. And so being really involved in those types of issues in the city, I think, is an example for us. And it's part of the reason why the book is called A Blueprint for Worker Solidarity, because there are so many models of things that we can do today. Just talking to our neighbors, understanding what their issues are, and then pointing them to the labor movement as a way to answer some of the things that they need.
Yes. In your conclusion, you write that the Racine labor community and the broader labor movement lost. And that felt jarring. It felt so final. What are you trying to say there?
Yeah, so they didn't lose, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe I should have worded that a little bit different. They did everything right. But workers can't, this isn't something that we as workers can do by ourselves. Mm-hmm. We need an active, engaged government, right? Who's going to help keep our bargaining playing field level. Right now, corporate interests, you know, have the bar tilted toward them. But it's also super inspiring to me the ways more and more people are returning to this idea of class solidarity and getting involved with unions. It's so inspiring to see what Walmart workers and Starbucks workers and art museums workers and librarians and adjunct faculty, graduate students, the ways that folks are coming together and seeing themselves in common cause with each other and really celebrating all of the ways that we are different and how those differences can help us unite and have a real multiracial working class movement for economic justice. And I think that really that the conclusion is a call to policymakers and to scholars to really narrate the stories of the past differently, and to not take away people's power, and to really showcase like what does work at a local level and how that can transform at the national level.
That what you do locally can have such great ripple effects well beyond Racine or whatever community you live in.
Exactly, exactly. When folks are talking about Wisconsin and national politics, right, places like Racine matter. Mm-hmm. And the energy coming out of Racine can really shape, right, what's happening in the state of Wisconsin, what's happening in the United States more broadly. And understanding the complexity of that story matters for the decisions that we make.
Naomi, thank you for sharing your research. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's very exciting to talk with you today.
And that was Naomi R. Williams, who is an assistant professor of labor studies and employment relations at Rutgers University. The book is called A Blueprint for Worker Solidarity, Class Politics and Community in Wisconsin. They talked with us about how workers in Racine built up unions and a more inclusive working class community decades ago and the people who fought for workers' rights.
And if you have a story from your community that you'd like more research on, you'd like to hear it told, well, let us know about it. You can email wisconsintoday@wpr.org. That's wisconsintoday@wpr.org.